In this week's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with coach and podcaster Aram Grigorian, host of the Real Coaches Summit, also known as 4 Weeks to the Beach. Aram and I spoke about what people think holds them back and what holds them back in reality, how his perimenopausal clients thrive, and why we need to focus on the boring basics. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Aram, and please, if you enjoy the show, subscribe and give us a rating, or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. Now on to my conversation with Aram. Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with nutrition coach, podcaster, and host of the Real Coaches Summit, Aram Grigorian. Aram, welcome to the show.
I appreciate you having me on. And it's cool to see that we're doing this internationally too.
Yeah, one of the beauties of online coaching, I guess, we get to connect with people all over the world. It's my absolute pleasure speaking with you, and I'm looking forward to getting into all things nutrition and training. But before we do that, I would love to hear just a little bit more about yourself, how you got to where you are today in terms of your training, but also in terms of your business.
The 30,000 foot view is that I was in finance for 7 years, and in 2012, formally, I was laid off and just not a career I wanted to stay in. So I pursued personal training. Before that, I'd been kind of already interested in it on a pedestrian level, just for myself and my own knowledge to be able to enhance my own training and nutrition. But it wasn't anything formal. It wasn't a formal education. It was basically just the old school way of looking things up, which was reading books, reading magazines, reading forums, listening to other people who had some experience talk about their journeys, and just collecting information secondhand. And now we live in an age where information is not a problem and it's very quick. But I got into personal training full time, seeing people in person, whether it was in a gym or at their home, for that was basically my business model for 10 years. And then I moved from Connecticut to California, had to basically give up in-person training and replace it with online training. And I've been online now since 2020. And it's been a really good transition because I actually feel as though results are much better with online coaching than they are with in-person training.
Wow, that's super interesting. I mean, I have never heard someone compare directly and say that they do prefer online training in terms of results. I think for most coaches, it's more, or at least from what I've heard, it's often more time efficient, also for the client and, of course, the coach, but also perhaps just in the sense of you don't expend as much energy if you're an introvert or whatever, if you're not with people all day long. But very interesting to hear that you also think it had a positive effect on your clients and your business. Or your Instagram handle is 4 Weeks to the Beach. So I'm curious, first and foremost, why you chose this name.
So the idea of 4 Weeks to the Beach is that you're always living life in a perpetual level of solid maintenance behavior. And that if you have something coming up in your life that you want to feel more confident for, look a little bit better for, whatever, you're not having to overhaul and change 95 different things about your lifestyle to try to lose 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 pounds, whatever, in such a short period of time, which we know is unrealistic. So it's just, can you actually live like you're 4 weeks away from something that you'd want to look really, really good for? And it's not a quick fix promise. It's actually quite the opposite. It's really more of a long-term strategy of, can we build foundational basic habits and get really, really good at them and the boring stuff? And then the boring stuff just, we know, works, so that when we do have something like, well, let's say you have a trip coming up or a vacation or a bachelorette party, or, you know, you're going to a conference and you're speaking, you just want a little bit more stage presence and confidence. You're not having to just completely change all of your behaviors, which we know is just not going to happen. So it's perpetual maintenance living. And I think that's where we've gotten so far away from treating ourselves well and self-care being our priority, that now people are having to dive into fad diets and fat loss drugs and very, very, very aggressive protocols in short periods of time to try to remedy 15, 20 plus years of poor eating behavior and poor self-care. And it's becoming very, very difficult to work with people because the instant gratification model is just so strong.
Well, I absolutely love that mission, and that's totally aligned with my mindset in the sense of what can we do to lead or have a body that's, lifestyle lean, so to speak, most of the year anyway, not something unsustainably lean, but lifestyle lean. And I'm curious, what are your main strategies for that? You mentioned that they are kind of basic and boring, but what are these particular strategies?
So I work with mostly women over 40. That's kind of my demographic. So women entering into perimenopause or in menopause, postmenopause, usually don't have a very strong foundation of lifting inside the gym. Usually they're coming from a group fitness or a personal training background. Oftentimes they've jumped from diet to diet with no real nutritional or calorie control on their own without a diet being in place. So really, my first step is just to be able to kind of evaluate where somebody currently is, what kind of systems they have or what kind of systems they don't have, which is usually the case. And just building a routine. Like, can you eat 3 to 5 times a day? Can each meal contain 25 to 35 grams of protein? Can you get a vegetable or a fruit more often than not throughout the day? Are you limiting the amount of meals out that you're having and meals that you're ordering out? Are you cooking most of your own food? Are you waking up and going to bed at about the same time? Are you drinking enough water? Are you taking enough steps? Like all of the stuff that people should be doing anyway, that just they aren't because it's not a priority to them or because they've lost focus of it, is what I'm trying to establish within the first 4 to 6, 4 to 8 weeks. And then after that, we can actually play around with muscle building protocols and fat loss protocols, and actually start to change certain targets around to be able to facilitate physical changes. But until somebody gives me the basics and shows me that they're capable of the basics, I don't do shit.
Amazing. Yeah, I love all these strategies. I'm curious, in regards to one of the things that you mentioned. You mentioned cooking mostly home cooked meals and not eating out as much. For the listener, I mean, that's something that I try to instill in my clients as well. But for the listener, why is that so important? Or how is that just helpful as people want to lose body fat and particularly throughout perimenopause and menopause?
So most women that I work with are not are maintaining body weight under 2,000 calories. Most. I mean, it's very rare that I have a woman eating over 2,000 calories because that's just not how her metabolism has been functioning for the last 15 or 20 years. And if that's the case, it's very easy to overconsume. Your average restaurant meal is going to be anywhere between 700 to 900 calories above the equivalent that you would make at home. So let's say, for example, you were making chicken parm at home. It's probably going to be 700 to 900 calories at a restaurant over what you would be able to cook at home and replicate. And restaurants are not in the business of taking care of us. They're in the business of entertaining us, and that's what it should be for. But unfortunately, now restaurant meals and takeout meals have become so conveniently accessible that they're being utilized as the majority of people's consumption. And they just don't realize how much they're actually consuming. They may not be eating a large physical amount of food, right? Like something like avocado toast. What is avocado toast? Avocado toast is a fat source on top of a carb source. It's the same exact thing calorically as bread and butter. Now, a woman is never going to eat bread and butter because she's been scared shitless to eat bread and butter her whole life. But she has no problem going for brunch with the girlfriends on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays and having avocado toast 2 or 3 times over. So it's just these very, very small lacks of self-awareness and just awareness of nutrition labels and what's in your food. Something as simple as like an egg has almost as much fat as it does protein. So like to me, an egg is not a good protein source. Nuts are not a good protein source. Peanut butter is not a good protein source. If your protein is coming with this extreme amount of fat, well, now your calories are going up. And I think the thing that people don't want to believe in and don't want to understand is the idea that calories are real, they matter, and they're everywhere. And if you don't control them, you don't get to get the outcomes that you want to have. So I don't care that you're eating healthy or what you think or perceive to be healthy because somebody arbitrarily slapped that label on a food. You can overeat healthy food. People do it constantly. You can overeat grapes, you can overeat fruit, you can overeat meat, you could overeat. I mean, it's pretty hard to overeat vegetables, but let's be honest. I'm sure we can figure out a way to do that if we deep fry them and throw them in oil and dressing. But, people are blaming carbs, people are blaming sugar, people are blaming insulin, people are blaming menopause. And what it all comes down to, and if anybody's listening to this and you're still feeling lost, it's calories. If you don't control calories in, you don't need to worry about anything else before you figure that out.
Yeah, I absolutely hear that. And I think if someone has or believes that it's their hormones or their genetic makeup or whatever that's preventing them from losing weight, but they haven't properly tracked their calories and weighed out their food, not just guesstimated or logged like a generic log like chicken curry or whatever, but actually logged the parts for, let's say, at least a month, not just a few days, but a month. Yeah, I would say start there, absolutely. And to the point of just higher calories when we're eating out, I read a study not too long ago where they actually compared fast food restaurants and just regular restaurants as well in terms of caloric density. And sometimes people, I believe, just think, oh, this is fast food, but I don't eat fast food. Exactly to your point of like, I'm eating well when I'm eating out. I only had that salmon with wet vegetables. I only had that salad, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, you believe it's good. It makes it feels good. It feels very different than eating that burger at McDonald's. But this study in particular showed that by no means does that mean that they're lower in calories. The restaurant, even if it's a fancy restaurant, even if it's a Michelin star restaurant, like it doesn't matter.
It's probably going to be more calorie dense if it is a Michelin star restaurant, because they're going to cook with double the amount of butter and oil or ghee, or that's how they create flavor. That's how they create allure and food quality. And I think sometimes when you talk about calories, people have this very polarizing black and white vision of anything now, right? Like if you're not a Republican, you're a Democrat. If you're not a Democrat, you're a Republican. And if you're one or the other, you're wrong. If you're not vegan, you're a carnivore, and that's wrong. If you're not a carnivore, you're vegan, and that's wrong. So nobody really understands what to do anymore, because there's too much bullshit and there's too much information, and everybody's saying something different. So everybody's just like stuck sitting in the middle, not knowing which way to go. So oftentimes when people hear me talk about calories, they're like, "Well, Aram, what about food quality?" I said, "I'm not saying ignore food quality, because food quality is going to dictate how you actually feel and how you get through your day. But you can eat all the best food quality and eat everything organic and eat everything grass-fed and pasture-raised and wild-caught, but you can still eat too fucking much of it. That's it. Like, it just comes down to simply, if you eat too much calories, not too much food, because again, a difference. There's a difference between 500 calories worth of food that has a lot of density, nutrient density to it. So, like, let's say a bowl of blueberries with a bowl of oatmeal and a side of salmon and a bunch of vegetables. Like, that meal is going to be 500 calories worth of very dense foods, and you're going to be stuffed afterwards. You can easily eat 500 calories worth of crackers and nuts and chips in one sitting, devour it in 5 seconds, and be absolutely still hungry afterwards. And that's why people get in trouble, because they don't have an actual consistent meal routine. Like, every day I wake up, I have almost the same breakfast. 3, 4 hours later, I eat the same thing for my second meal. I have 3 or 4 hours later, I'm eating the same thing for my third meal. And for dinner, it's going to be a variation of one to two different proteins, one to two different starches, and some kind of a vegetable. And I flavor it with some type of a condiment that I might not have used yesterday and I won't use tomorrow. It doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. All it takes is having maybe 2 hours of preparation a week in the kitchen total. And if you can't dedicate 2 hours to the kitchen, don't dedicate 7 hours in the gym, because it's not going to make a difference.
Yeah, and I hear the point of like food quality so much because I come from that place as well. Before I learned about macros 8, 9 years ago, I also came from like, oh, clean food or clean eating, and I was doing paleo, and I thought like, why am I not looking the way that I want to look? Why don't I have the definition that I want to have? And then lo and behold, when I started tracking my food, and like my breakfast would have been eggs, three eggs, and salmon, and avocado, and seeds, and whatever, all quote unquote good food. And I tracked it for the first time. I was like, holy crap, my breakfast is like 800 calories. Not to speak of my bulletproof coffee that I had beforehand, which in and of itself was like 300 calories. So,
Yeah,
yes, it is so eye-opening.
it adds up fast, and it's hard to track food that you're not preparing, and it's hard to track food that has a ton of ingredients in it. And that's why I think people get so frustrated with the food tracking process, and they throw their hands up and say it doesn't work. Saying food tracking doesn't work is like saying the speedometer in your car doesn't work. It's not supposed to do anything for you. It's only supposed to shine a light on your behavior and put a number on your behavior. That's all it's doing. So just because you start tracking food doesn't mean you magically start losing weight. Just because you start tracking food doesn't mean your life starts to magnificently get better. You have to take that data and that information, verify that it's correct, collect it for long enough, and then alter your behavior based on that information. But you have to also have some idea of where you should be, which most people don't understand. Why? Because we have this very unproductive and contextless narrative of, well, you're not eating enough, and that's why you're not losing weight, which is absolute bullshit. If anybody's ever heard that term, it's like telling a poor person you need to spend more money if you want to make more money. That's not how it works. So you're not eating too little. If you were eating too little, you would start to notice it. You would start to actually lose weight. So if you get to a point where you're not losing weight anymore, your body naturally is going to plateau. So you might have to actually push calories down a little bit further. And we don't have any choice over where our body wants to take us. If our body says 1,100 calories is where we're going to see fat loss, so be it. That sucks, but it is what it is. Are there ways to combat that and make your life a little bit more flexible? Sure, build a shit ton of muscle. Build as much muscle as you possibly can over the course of a lifetime. I don't care if you're a man, woman, or child. And move your ass as much as you possibly can. The more you sit and the more you don't stand up and the more you don't walk around, the less your body needs fuel. That's just how it works. If the car never leaves the garage, you don't have to put gas in it. If the car's always driving 200, 300 miles a day, you got to keep stopping for gas every 100 miles. That's just how it works. And it's so simple. And I think the problem is we just have too much stuff floating around. And people want to ignore the simplicity of it because the simplicity also places responsibility on the individual. It's like, well, you're responsible for this, which they immediately internalize psychologically and say, oh boy, I fucked this up and I'm a failure. No. You just didn't know better. And now you do, because now you have tracked your food and now you have seen evidence of where you can make some changes and improve some of your habits. That doesn't make you a failure. Failure to me is somebody who doesn't care and doesn't try. So the only time you can ever consider yourself a failure accurately is if you stop trying and if you stop caring. At that point, you're a failure. Yes. Move out of the way and let the rest of us do what we have to do. But if you're actively trying and you're trying to learn and you're trying to figure this stuff out and you're reaching out for help, because that's something a lot of people don't do, they have no problem getting their oil changed by somebody else. They have no problem with them with their getting a haircut from somebody else. They have no problem with somebody else managing their finances, cutting their lawn, taking care of all these other things in their life. But when it comes to nutrition and fitness, they're like, oh, I can figure it out. You don't have enough time. You just don't have, you're a mother of three children. You have a job, you have a husband, you have a house, you have friends. If you have money and you have that available energy, then dedicate it towards somebody else to help you, because then you don't have to sit there and be confused about what to do. Now, granted, not every coach that you'll find is a good coach. Actually, I would say most coaches on the internet suck and they don't know what they're talking about. And I'm not saying I'm the best, but I'm going to be as honest as I ever will be with anybody on this podcast, on my Instagram page, on a phone call. And I just don't want people to waste their time and their energy and their money anymore buying supplements or buying these stupid $40 a month online programs that give you no feedback. They're always afraid to work with a coach because they don't want to invest in the money, but they're going to spend $500 to $700 every other month on supplements to try to figure out their cortisol problem that they've been convinced that they have, as opposed to just the fact that you're just fucking eating too much and you're not moving enough. That's 99% of your problem almost every single time.
I absolutely think your analogies are so great, and I hope that they really paint pictures for the listener as well, in the sense of the car and the fuel and so on. It just makes complete sense. And what I have unfortunately also sometimes found, when you do those calculations with someone, or you show them, you guide them towards, like, hey, this is how much you're actually moving, and this is how much you're actually eating. Some people start arguing with reality, and that's just sad, because it's not helping that person. It's not helping. That's like saying, like, oh no, there's 72 minutes in an hour. Like, you can't push it. Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, a calorie is a calorie. There is this and that many calories in a tablespoon of oil. There's no spinning that. It just is that
120. That's the
way.
crazy part, right? Like
Exactly.
15 milliliters. And I challenge anybody to do this. or 15 milliliters, which is about 15 grams of oil, into a little bowl and see how little it is. And that's 120 calories. Tell me how much oil you put in your food before you cook it. I actually don't even use oil in my cooking. I don't use spray butter. I don't use oil. I just use nonstick pans. I scrape them if I have to. To me, I don't need to add fat because before 7 a.m., I'll already be at 20 grams of fat for the day. Between three fish oil pills, between the creamer in my coffee, between the fat inside my ground beef, I'm already at 20 grams of fat and I haven't even started my day yet. So people just don't see this stuff and then they're just wildly confused. And it's like all you have to do is walk into a store and flip the label around on that food and you'll see all the information you'll ever need. It takes you 13 seconds and all you have to look for is what's the serving size? What's the total amount of calories per serving size? And understand that all the information below that is for the serving size, not for the entire package, for that one serving size. So be careful with that. And all you have to look at is what's your total fat? What's your total carbs? What's your total protein? And out of those three numbers, whatever number is the highest, that's what that food is a source of. So if you have a food that's 6 grams of fat, 30 grams of carbs, and 4 grams of protein, it's a carb source. That's it. It's a carb source with some fat and some protein. If it's 16 grams of fat, 10 grams of carbs, and 7 grams of protein, it's a fat source. It doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. And then people want to do like the macro-friendly hacky recipes where they're going to combine 97 different things, and now they have to make recipes inside of their food tracking app that are 16 different line items. And then this is why people get frustrated. Put one source of whatever carb, protein, and fat you're eating on a plate and eat it and flavor it however you want. If you can keep it that simple, you're going to feel a hell of a lot better. Your digestion is going to improve. When you control calories, your mood's going to improve. Your energy is going to get to the point where you're feeling like you can run around all day long without ever stopping. You're going to feel full. You're going to feel satisfied. And now you're probably going to have a little bit more flexibility on the weekend. So if you do want to have a meal or two off, you certainly can. As long as it's not complete overindulgence. But again, it's sad to watch, especially for women, because women get lied to in this industry a lot. Like men really don't get lied to as much because we just don't care as much about our bodies as women do. But women have been indoctrinated into believing they have to be a certain size or they have to be a certain weight. And unless you're this weight and this size, you're not going to be important, you're not going to be pretty, and nobody's going to love you. And unfortunately, their moms fucked them up because their moms went to Weight Watchers and their moms were always trying to restrict their food. And then they just ended up over consuming at night when nobody was looking. And these patterns exist for decades. And it's all part of the mental health equation. This has nothing to do with calories and macros and sets and reps. This has everything to do with your identity, with what you are or what you're not. What makes you happy? What doesn't? What fulfills you? What doesn't? Do you stop and do any of this type of work? Do you work with a therapist? If your relationship with food and your body image is bad, you don't need another diet to fuck you up. You need a mental health professional to help guide you through this so you can have some peace and some freedom forever.
Yeah, Aram, I really like how you're simplifying it for people out there and bringing it back to the basics. And I think you're touching on such a good point also in the sense of just keeping the meals basic, really, really like the interesting or the great thing about our taste buds is that they adapt. Of course, the first day that you switch from using a quarter of a cup of oil to fry your chicken into, I don't know, cooking it in a nonstick pan, it's not going to taste the same. Of course not. The oil is there for a reason, to enhance the flavor and all of that. But if you gradually accept, okay, it might taste a little bit different, but if I add that sriracha sauce or the mustard or whatever, it still tastes acceptable. And just getting into the mindset of not every meal that I eat needs to be the most delicious one. Not every meal that I eat needs to be something that I'm craving at the moment. It just like sometimes food also can just be satiating. And yes, of course, it shouldn't taste like cardboard, but
No.
it doesn't need to be like, oh, what am I craving right now? Well, actually, I don't feel like the chicken and the rice that I have sitting in the fridge. I kind of feel like this and that. Like when people just say, yeah, no, what you mentioned, having more flexibility on the weekend, looking forward to one or two meals per week where you're eating something different. I think that can be a really good shift in mindset if people just turn into that direction.
Well, think about it this way. Let's say we'll take your average woman again, below 2,000 calories. Let's say something between 130 and 190 pounds. Basically describes almost my entire demographic. If you eat three meals per day, that's 21 meals per week. If two to three meals a week of flexibility is not enough for you, you need to find some other interests in your life. You need to start going for walks, for hikes, travel, talk with friends, go visit coffee shops, make puzzles, draw coloring books, do whatever you need to do. But if the only enjoyment that you have in life is eating, we need to really understand why that is and how to fix that, because that's going to become a problem at some point soon. Because even if you go to a restaurant, you make all the best decisions. I'm getting a salad. Okay, cool. There's cheese on it. There's dried cranberries on it. There's nuts on it. There's dressing, 2.5 ounces usually at least, which is going to be anywhere between 20 to 40 grams of fat, depending on the dressing. Are you putting double protein on it or any protein on it at all? So, like that salad that you're eating could be absolutely just grass with nothing else and completely not filling. Or it could be a complete calorie bomb that you might as well have just gotten the burger and the fries. It would have been the same amount of calories and you probably would have been much more satisfied afterwards. So it's just understanding these basics. And by the way, every restaurant now is going to be able to modify your food. If you say, I don't want this, I want that, I don't want this, put this on the side, they're going to do it. And I know that at first it might seem embarrassing or it might seem like you're being a pain in the ass, but if you're paying $25 or $30 per a dish, you get to do whatever you want with that food. So if you don't want something, and even if you make all these accommodations, 99% of the time, they don't do a good job of listening to you and they're going to bring out whatever they bring out anyway. But to me, if I go to a restaurant, I don't want to have to think about making good decisions. So I'm going to make good decisions 99% of the other times that I eat. So then when I go to a restaurant, I can eat whatever the fuck I want and not care about it. And that gives me the freedom I want because then I have something to look forward to. It's a treat. It's supposed to be a treat. I mean, when I first moved to America, I'm from Russia originally, and we moved to America in 89. And I remember going to a restaurant with my parents, and like I can almost remember the day. It was like 1994. There's four of us, me, my brother, my mom, my dad. We're sitting in our first restaurant in America, and they bring out these plates that, and my father was like, "How many people are you feeding with these plates?" And it was like literally like everybody's plate was the size of what we would serve an entire tables full of people in Russia. And that's how, you know, because in Russia, and I'm sure in Germany, it's probably similar. You have a lot of different things on the table, and everybody just kind of grabs different things and they put together the plates of stuff that they want. It's very communal. You know, everybody drinks while they eat. And it's eating is an event. It's a way to bring people together. The food really isn't the focus. Right, the food is just there. It's just a vehicle for being able to bring people together. It's the people that you're there for. But in America, it's different. In America, it's all about the food. It's like, well, let's go out to dinner so I can just get all this shit, and I'm not even going to care that you're sitting in front of me. I'm not even going to spend any time talking to you or being present. I'm just going to have my face played, you know, planted into this plate. And then what's the point at that point? Just go out. Like, I would almost rather, like, if people invite me out for dinner, I'm like, no, let's go get coffee tomorrow morning. Let's get a coffee. I can control that. We can go take 10 or 15,000 steps while walking around, talking, catching up. You don't have to do it with booze. You don't have to do it with food. If you want to, and that's your lifestyle, great. You just have to lower your expectations because you're not going to be able to live a life of calorie control when you're going out to eat five, six, seven times a week and you're a self-proclaimed foodie. It's not going to work for you.
I couldn't resonate more with what you're saying. And to me, the first thing that stood out to me was not necessarily the portions, because of course I had seen them more like on movies and stuff like that. But to the point of like rushing things, the first time I went out to eat in the US and they brought the check while we were still eating, I could not believe that. I was like, that would be a crime in a restaurant in Germany or in most European countries for that matter, because they want you to stay. They want you to take their time. They want you to have like an hour between your entree and your main. They want you to linger and have another beverage or whatever. Like as you said, making it about the experience and slowing, as opposed to you barely started eating and they bring you the check. It's just a completely different world, absolutely. But I love the thought of walking catch-ups, and I'm just encouraging people to, yeah, just grab a coffee and make it an active social encounter. And you're giving people so many great tips here in the sense of, well, number one, start tracking your calories accurately. Don't crave so much variety. Start training. But you mentioned your biggest audience, or the people that you mostly work with, are in perimenopause and menopause. And what other advice do you have for that population to just make that time of life suck a little bit less, so that we can still feel good in our bodies throughout that time?
So I think once you start to enter into perimenopause and menopause, you have to understand what that phase of life means. And what that means is now your ovaries are going to stop producing the chemicals that have been being in production for so long, 20, 30, 40 years, right? Estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, these are your main female sex hormones. And naturally, as you age as a woman, men experience this as well. It's called andropause. Those hormones will start to decline. As they decline, they make things challenging, and they make things challenging really indirectly. So it's not that you stop being able to control yourself. It's more now that your sleep sucks a little bit more than it used to. And when your sleep sucks, it's going to be much harder to make good choices the next day because you're going to be under a little bit more stress, because stress is going to be harder to tolerate when sleep is bad. Let's say you're having a bad morning and your body image sucks. Well, the last thing you want to do is step on a scale or look in the mirror. Maybe just throw some clothes on that are comfortable and leave the house without thinking about anything. And understand that when sleep is down, stress resilience is down, stress is high, it's going to be much, much harder to stick to a routine. So that's one aspect of it. You're going to probably feel a little bit more bloated and probably a little bit more water retention because of those natural hormonal declines. You might not be able to have the same ability to build muscle because testosterone and estrogen are down. And those are the two chemicals that regulate the body's ability to build muscle. So if you're not trying to actively build muscle, you're losing it every single year. And the closer you get to 60, the faster you're losing it. And I think too many women are still believing that cardiovascular exercise is the best form of fat loss exercise. But at the end of the day, you don't burn that many calories doing cardio, and you really don't burn that many calories lifting weights either. So you can't rely on calories burned to take care of a calorie overconsumption problem. It's much easier to eat 500 calories less than it is to burn 500 calories. And then there's this narrative that's very common in the menopausal field. It's, well, you have to eat more carbs. That's good advice for somebody who doesn't eat any carbs whatsoever, but it's bad advice for somebody who doesn't know how many grams of carbs they're eating. So it's very ambiguous, contextless based advice. Or they say things like, eat more protein. Well, how much more protein? How much do I really need? Well, the reality is, take whatever body weight you want to be, minus the fat that you have on inside your body. And that can be your protein goal in grams. So let's say you're 200 pounds as a woman. And if we stripped all the fat off of you, you're 150 pounds. Well, something around 130 to 150 grams of protein is probably fine. General rule of thumb, the more fat you have and the less visible muscle mass you have, the worse your body will do with carbs and the better your body will do with fat. Why? Because carbohydrates are an energy-based macronutrient, meaning they produce immediate energy for immediate movement. So things like walking, running, long-distance cardiovascular work at low intensities, that is not a carb-burning exercise. So I don't give a shit how far you run. If you run at a 12 or a 13-minute mile pace, you're not burning any carbs whatsoever. You're burning fat. So you don't need to fuel the body if you have plenty of body fat on the body. Do you want to give yourself some fuel? Yes, but you don't want to give yourself too much because what is body fat? Body fat is stored energy that hasn't been utilized yet. And I get this all the time. I have women who come to me who are 170, 180, 200 pounds, and they run, but they run slowly and they run far. But then they have a running coach that tells them, well, you have to eat 250 grams of carbs. No, the fuck you don't, because you're going to get fatter. You're going to get fatter purely, it's not the carbs that are making you fatter, it's that you're eating too many calories. So you have to be able to eat just enough to be able to at least see a little bit of a reduction in weight, but it's still plenty of food to be able to get you through the exercise that you're doing. So it's not that menopause destroys your ability to lose weight. It just makes things a little bit harder, usually more psychologically than physically. Like, yes, physically, you're going to be more tired. You're going to have less energy. Your digestion might suck a little bit more. You might be moodier than usual, but it doesn't drop your metabolic rate by 50%. You know what I mean? It doesn't melt the muscle away from your body at all. It doesn't do any of these dangerous things that people say it does. The reductions in metabolism are so insignificant that they almost aren't even noticeable on a scale. But what does happen is there is a little bit of a reduction in metabolism to some degree. So if you've been chronically eating diet food or diet patterns, and you've never actually figured out how many calories you needed, you're probably going to be living in that 1500 to 1700 calorie range, which again makes it very easy to overconsume. So I think and you know, at some point, if you're doing everything right, like let's say you spend 6 months understanding your nutrition, being consistent, doing the walking, doing the steps, doing the cardio, doing the weightlifting, sleeping well, stressing less, like you've done everything right for 6 months and still things aren't working the way you want them to, then you go get your blood work done. Then you go figure out what's going on. But I think once you hit 40 as a woman, you should be getting blood work once a year anyway, getting full thyroid, full sex hormone workups. Why not see and have a basis of comparison year over year so that as you head into perimenopause at 43, you can compare what blood work looked like to 43 to what did it look like at 40? What did it look like at 38? I went through andropause at 31 years old. I lost all my testosterone when I was 31. I never did any steroids before that. And I went and dieted very, very extremely for a photo shoot to get down to like 6-7% body fat, and I did. And then afterwards, I didn't rebound properly, and my endocrine system was disrupted, and it created us some major problems. And basically, for 2 years, I couldn't figure out what the hell was wrong. And finally, after going through 7, 10 different doctors who basically all told me I needed Viagra and I needed some type of a SSRI to cure my mental health, I found a doctor who basically tested all my blood work and said, "You have a testosterone deficiency. That's the only problem you have." He goes, "You eat well, you exercise, you sleep well, you don't stress, you don't have any reason to feel like this outside of the fact that your testicles don't produce testosterone anymore. So here's a shot twice a week and your life will come back." And it's exactly what happened. But don't take hormone replacement therapy and then also eat like shit and also sit on your ass and also still don't address your sleep. Because at that point, then you're just wasting money on drugs that aren't doing anything for you anymore.
Yeah, I think starting with lifestyle behaviors should definitely always come first, and getting blood work taken once a year, that's a great advice for anybody, really. I definitely agree. I think two things on top of that that I see, or one you kind of mentioned as well, is just if women just do cardio sort of in that moderate intensity range all the time, or even moderate to low, and never, I think we're learning more about how important it is to challenge the different energy pathways and not just that one. So I think that would be another thing to kind of like add into the mix of things. And yeah, alcohol is really one thing that I just see. It's just a handbrake, even more so than at other times of your life, but it becomes a stronger handbrake during perimenopause and menopause. And if women just stay away from that completely, or really minimize that during that time, they, in my opinion, can only do themselves a favor.
Well, what does alcohol do? It prevents you from having muscle protein synthesis, which is the vehicle for why you grow muscle. If your body isn't able to synthesize protein properly, you won't be able to rebuild tissue. If you don't rebuild tissue, you can't grow muscle. So it impedes your ability to recover from exercise. It lowers your ability to build muscle. It lowers your ability to sleep well. It increases your insulin resistance. It increases the body's physical stress response and hormone. So everything, I mean, listen, don't get me wrong. I love to drink. Every once in a while, having a few cocktails or having a lot of cocktails is fun because it turns you off from life. It's fun. It lowers your inhibitions. It does all sorts of mentally positive things. But if you're doing it every single day, or if you're doing it 4 or 5 times a week, even if you're having a glass or two of wine every single day, it's a cumulative effect that you're not going to be able to come back from very quickly because every single day you're also impeding your sleep and your body's ability to recover. And it's just making things that much more difficult upon everything else that you're already either doing or not doing. So it just puts more pressure on you to have to behave better in every other department, which is not easy to do already, because it's not that any of this stuff is complicated. It's very simple, but it does take work. It does take mindfulness and effort and consistency. And when you have multiple children and you have a job and you have responsibilities outside of work, it can seem overwhelming when it isn't a habit yet. So that's why you, I, and anybody else that has a brain in their head that's a coach is going to preach consistency and basic lifestyle interventions first before we talk about any type of fat loss. Let's be honest. We have a woman that comes to us, and in the first 4 to 6 weeks, just by giving her a routine, she's already going to lose a couple pounds anyway. A couple, nothing significant, but a couple, which is exciting. And I never want to negate the excitement of vanity. Because I'm vain. I'm 40 years old. I want to look good. I want to be able to walk into a room with other 40-year-old men and feel more confident. I want to be able to put on clothes that I want to be able to put on and feel good, or take my clothes off and feel good. There's nothing wrong with that goal. But if I get, I'm able to focus on that goal because I do everything else that I'm supposed to do. But if you're not even doing the basics right, you don't get to get upset that you don't look the way you look, because the problem that you're having is a problem you've created over the course of a lifetime. So what I have to do very often psychologically, and most of my work is really more rooted in psychology than it is in physics. Physiology is easy. Like, I'm bored of physiology, to be quite honest with you. I mean, bioenergetics, fat loss, muscle gain, these are black and white, easy to teach, easy to do concepts. If it was just a robot, program in this, program in that, boom, result is inevitable. But we're not robots. We're human beings with emotions and patterns and traumas and limiting belief systems and identity issues and all these other psychological barriers that we haven't had any time to work on, or we don't take any time, right? How many women do you know that will go 6 or 7 hours without food, right? They don't take time for themselves ever. Everybody comes first, mom comes last. That's how it always is. They never ask for help. They're always the last ones in the kitchen at 9 o'clock at night, de-stressing with their kids' snacks because they haven't eaten all day. And it's because they didn't take 5 minutes that day to just breathe and to just calm down. And they didn't take a couple times that week to journal their thoughts or where their stress is coming from or how they can fight it. They didn't talk to their husband about asking them to offload some of their responsibilities and share some of the work so that she can get to the gym for 45 minutes. And these conversations are just not being had. And then women wonder why they're not getting results. And it's because you don't speak your truth. You're too afraid to say what you need or how you feel. And you don't allow other people to help you. And I think at some point that pattern needs to stop, or else you're going to keep getting the same problem over and over and over again. And it's really frustrating.
Yeah, Aram, I really like all the work that you're doing and your message in general and how you're helping your clients. You do also have something great for other coaches, which I touched on, and it's called the Real Coaches Summit. And I would love to hear just a little bit more about that, what that is, or how often that takes place.
So I started going to fitness-based events probably back in 2017, 2018. A, because I like the social aspect of it, because you get to just be with other peers that are in your industry. But then there's also the learning component of it, right? The continuing education component. Excuse me. When I first became an online coach in 2019, 2020, I maxed out 2 credit cards and I was going to 3 to 5 events a year. And I was going to seminars, local seminars. I would fly to seminars. And I would piece together the education that I needed. So if I didn't know about bioenergetics or cardio, I would make sure to go into that talk and ask that presenter questions. And I would find out, where did you get your information from? And then I would talk to other coaches, like, how do you deal with this type of client? How is your business set up? So it was an opportunity for me to learn other things that your normal certification classes don't teach you, because they only give you this much. But our clients come to us with this many problems, right? Like, we have so many more things that we have to fix and remedy and help. And we see so many different types of populations. We need to be equipped with all this information to be able to, at least if you don't know the answer, find the answer. And if you can't find the answer, you can refer somebody to somebody else that knows the answer. But I just saw that there was a problem with events. Every year it was the same speakers. The events were not very all-inclusive. So You would have to figure out where you had to go eat. You'd have to drive from place to place in an Uber. The hotel rooms were expensive. The content that was presented on stage was never very precise and never very tactical. It was always like theory based and it got you excited, but it didn't teach you anything. So it basically left people like very, very motivated. But then by Tuesday, all that motivation was gone. So you just spent 3 days in a weekend seminar and you got nothing out of it. So for me, I just said, hey, these events aren't as good as what I want them to be. So I just created my own. And it started back in 2023. I had 24 speakers on stage over the course of 2 days. There was two people speaking, three people back then speaking at a time, which is a little bit complicated. So the last year I did 14 presenters, two rooms. But I do all meals included. So breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Everybody sits together. The speakers sit with you so that they're not celebrities that just run away after they speak. Like Alan Aragon is going to be speaking this year. You can sit at lunch with Alan and ask him questions about nutrition. Barbie Bowles, who's a cognitive functional health specialist who also works on menopausal women. You can sit with Barbie and ask her, hey, like I have a client who's 54 and she's having these problems. How would you help her? You don't get that type of education or those type of interactions when you sit in front of your computer all day and you never leave your house. So I encourage anybody, if a coach is listening to this and the only thing you invest in is photo shoots and new sneakers and business coaching, you're not going to become a better coach because we don't need to sell more shitty coaching. We need to be able to solve problems with clients by having an educational background that knows how to program nutrition, that knows how to program training appropriately, that understands the different energy systems and how to manipulate them, that understands emotional eating behavior, that understands poor body image behavior and where it comes from, and being able to be armed with information on how to handle these conversations. And that's all the type of education that I put on stage. And I pick real coaches. I don't pick celebrity coaches. I don't pick celebrity trainers. I pick people that have not very big followings. I mean, some people that I have speaking have large followings, but most of the time it's nowhere more than like 200,000. They're still working with clients. They still have a business that they have to run. So these are people that are in the weeds doing the work that we're doing. They're just further ahead of us than we are. And that's who I want to be on stage. So I just created something that I think is just a much better model than everybody else has. And it's just much more practical and it's fun because a lot of times these things are stuffy. And I'm not a stuffy person and I know how to throw a party. So if you come to my event, you're going to get fed very, very well. You're going to get educated very well. You're going to build confidence. You're going to build friendships. You're going to increase your network. You're probably going to get on somebody's podcast. You can invite somebody to your own podcast. And who knows the relationships that you build and what they can come up with.
Well, I know that I literally just put this on my to-go-to list in 2025, so I'm excited to meet you then in person.
Thank you.
And I will most certainly make sure to put this the link to this event and of course all your handles into the show notes so people can go and check it out. And I just want to thank you so much for your time and sharing all your wisdom with us today.
I appreciate the opportunity to speak to your audience. If anybody here ever has a question for me, I always answer all my DMs. I don't have any assistants. I don't do virtual assistants. I answer everything myself. So if you shoot me a message and you ask me a question, you'll get a very thorough response. Half the time, I'm probably going to tell you just listen to your coach. Or if your coach sucks, then I'm not saying Lisa, but if you have another coach that you have and you're not happy with them, you don't have to keep paying them. You can go find somebody else. If you're not getting questions answered on time, if you're not getting any type of education whatsoever, or any feedback outside of just, nope, do better next week, you don't have a coach, you have a puppet. And good coaches are not easy to find, but they are out there. And luckily, when you have somebody like Lisa and you have somebody like me who can educate you on these things, you're going to be able to make much better choices.
Truly hope so. Yes, good words spoken. Thank you so much, Aram.
Thank you, Lisa.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Aram. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And one more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. Feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.